Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most. We're going to jump right into the interview. Today, we have screenwriter, writer extraordinaire, Lamont McGee. Say hello, Lamont.
Hello, lovely people.
Oh, our studio audience loves you already. Look at that. Yes, yes. So how are you, bro?
Oh, man, I'm good. It's 2020.
2020. Another year older.
Yeah, we're in the future, man.
I know, right? I thought we'd be wearing like galactic suits by now.
Yo, they'd be fly too. But no, it's crazy. Like you watch stuff like Back to the Future and realize you've passed Back to the Future.
I know,
but that and the Cubs won the World Series.
Right.
Yeah, that's it.
It's like what? What? Yeah, it's crazy. It's funny how movies and TV shows depict the future, and then when we're here, we're like, oh yeah, we're not wearing spacesuits yet, but maybe in 20 years.
Right, it's always 20 years. And I'm like, yo, I really could use a hover car. But we do have Michael Knight's watch, though.
Right, right, which I love. Like, when you see that, and you know, I always notice, too, with, like, technological advancements, it's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, now we've got that. Yeah, cool, cool, cool. But I'm waiting for the hoverboard. I'm waiting for the hover car. Those two things I'm definitely waiting for.
Yeah, I just don't want the first model.
No, the first model, I'm just going to let all those people crash first. Yeah.
It's like, whatever happened to Bill? Oh, he got a hover car. It's like, oh, I got you.
Lamont, where are you from?
L.A. kid, born and raised.
What? I didn't know this. Where'd you go to high school?
Actually, I went to high school in Woodland Hills. So okay. I grew up in South Central.
All right.
And I got bussed out back in the day when, you know, they put kids on a big yellow Twinkie.
That's right.
And they basically gave you the option. You could stay in your neighborhood, or there was this thing called permit with transportation where you could, you know, venture out and see the rest of the world. And since I grew up in South Central, it was a very little world and a lot of people never leave. I was like, eh, you know what? Let me go see how the other half lives.
Wow.
So when I was 13, I went to Parkman Junior High School. So 6 years, I got up at 5:30 every morning.
Wow.
Caught a bus at 6:30, like two blocks from my house. And then I played basketball in high school. So I didn't get home until like, I don't know, like 8:30.
Wow, dude.
I was like one of the few honors in AP kids on my bus. So I got really good at doing homework on the bus.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense, because you have a nice like hour and a half commute.
Oh, yeah, you got a bunch of time to
kill. That's a window of time, man.
My mother asked me if I did my homework twice. When I got to junior high school, it was the first week I was at Parkman, because she just wanted to make sure I settled in. And then my senior year, when I got into all these colleges, she's like, did you do your homework today? I was like, silly lady.
You're like, this is what the bus was for. Woman.
Have you ever seen me do 1 ounce of homework? No. Let's watch Golden Girls.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And where did you fall in love with TV, film, or writing?
Since I was a kid, like my mom and I, so I grew up in South Central in a time where it was gang wars, crack epidemic. It was like, you really didn't go out of the house that often. Like, right. You stayed on your block, but you didn't venture off too much. So I would just, you know, play with my friends in the neighborhood. But then when I was home, my mom and I would watch literally everything. Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, Danny Kaye.
Yeah, all the classics.
Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman. We just watched everything. And Bob Hope.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby. I love those Doris Day, Rock Hudson comedies.
Yeah.
So I grew up and I just loved just stories.
Yeah.
Just love storytelling. I love like
entertainment.
These worlds. Entertainment. And it got me out of where I was.
Right.
It didn't matter. I was stuck on a street in the middle of South Central with the battle ram driving around. No, I was watching Doris Day and Rock Hudson, or I was watching Bing Crosby and Bob Hope doing a Road to Wherever movie.
Or did you ever see their roasts? Their roasts are classic.
Oh, yeah, Dean Martin. He was amazing.
They were always like boozed up and just like singers left and right.
But it was always apple juice.
Yeah.
He was never drunk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Dean Martin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had a thing with alcohol. I think he got over it, but it was part of his act. So he would just literally just drink apple juice and pretend it's alcohol.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. I always thought they were all boozed up all the time.
He wasn't. They were.
And then when did you start like writing? Did you take an English class in school or a teacher that was like very influential?
When I was in fourth grade, I don't know if she's still around. I have to check. But I had this teacher, Miss Dorshak. And every time we came back from recess, she would make us lay down because, you know, kids are just super hyper.
Right.
And she was like, look, just put your head on the desk. I'll read to you. So she read to us. She read the Chronicles of Narnia.
Wow.
So every day she would read like 10, 15 pages or whatever. So that year we got through The Magician's Nephew, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
She was a fantasy lover for sure. Yes.
And then I just loved those stories. Yeah. And that was my first entree into, it was really nice being able to hear this story and go into this world.
That was your first audiobook, man.
It was. It was. It's very cheap, too. So I just grew up with a love of storytelling.
Yeah.
And then when I got a little older, coming home from school, run home to watch all the cartoons on Monday through Friday. And then they had Saturday cartoons when I was growing up.
What were your Saturday cartoons?
Oh, man.
Because I still remember mine.
Well, the Super Friends, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they had the Super Galactic Powers team where they introduced Cyborg and Firestorm. But I watched Gummy Bears.
Yeah, I was going to say Smurfs, Gummy Bears. That was
bouncing here and there and everywhere.
Yep, yep.
Turbo Team.
Yep.
Teenage
Mutant Ninja Turtles was like right before Gummy Bears. I remember the channel swap. Like
yeah.
I would go channel
Dungeons
2.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Four. Yep.
But I just loved. I used to love.
Did you ever wake up super early and watch Kid Quiz?
I had my 7:30 wake up with the Fruity Pebbles.
Oh, nice, nice.
And then I was in.
Yeah.
Until it was like 11:30, 12 till Soul Train came on.
Nice, dude.
Then I was there till 1, and then boom, I was outside. But my Saturdays it was booked up, and then Monday through Friday was He-Man, Silverhawks, Transformers, Voltron.
Voltron. Dude, I miss
GoBots.
Voltron, dude. I'm waiting for that movie to come out.
Especially when they're doing like
Power Rangers.
Power Rangers and the movie with the massive robots and the, I can't remember the name right now, and the aliens and the, Idris Elba was in it.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
But they can do Voltron.
Right.
Also,
GoBots, that takes me back too, man.
Leader One, Psykill. But it was the show, like anime, like grew. I had one anime show and it was Robotech.
Oh, yeah. I loved that show, dude.
Because I wasn't exposed to it because I didn't really get a lot of stuff. But right. Robotech was the thing.
Dude, I had the plane. That was my favorite toy for years, man.
And then they had it with the cycles could transform. I was in. So these stories, man, like, but I never thought I could do it.
Right.
Like,
why is that? Just because it was so far distant?
Because I have
the same thing with music. I'm like, oh, that's so like left field. It's so far away.
Well, it's because perfect example. I grew up in a house, it was five women, my grandfather and me. So I grew up watching Days of Our Lives, Another World, The Doctors, Santa Barbara, all these crazy soap operas, Passions later. And then my grandmother would look at those stories and she would actually believe the actors were just making up the lines.
Wow.
So writing things, it's kind of like, oh, who's the director? I love the actors, but I never thought about who wrote it.
Right.
But I was always good at telling stories. So, like, I was winning citywide essay contests when I was in third and fourth grade.
That's crazy.
Words, man.
Yeah.
I'm really good with words, but I choose to use it for good.
Well, it's also like you fall in love with words. Because words I never loved English class. Like I never, never loved English class. But I found myself falling in love with words and the wordsmiths and the great writers and the great lyricists and the great, you know what I mean? All of that. It's well, just because it becomes storytelling.
Well, because you know more than anybody, words matter.
Oh, yeah.
Like people say, oh, it's well, they just said, no, no, no. Words hurt.
Yes.
Words heal.
Yes.
Words
inspire.
Inspire. So if you can craft a sentence that elicits a response, like it's always weird when you write something for TV or for movies and the exact response you want to get from the audience you get.
That's like the goal. That is the goal.
It's so weird
though. Right.
It's
right.
Like, this is exactly how I played it out in my head. Literally, we make things up.
Right.
For a living.
Right.
This did not exist before. I was like, huh. But if we do this. And now people are saying my words and now it's out in the world. It is.
When was the first time that happened for you that we were like, oh my God, this is awesome?
Oh, man. Honestly, the first job I got in TV. Because movies, you write stuff and you rewrite things and it changes and you don't
really
get a chance to see it. But my first job was on this show called Single Ladies. And I remember being in Toronto because it was the last season. They moved from Atlanta to Toronto to shoot it. And I was there on set for the first day. And just to have people say my jokes and people in the crew laugh at the jokes while they're shooting, like chuckling, I was like, oh, the joke landed.
Right.
And then it hit me like, oh, I'm actually getting paid to do this now.
You're like, this is fun. This is like Wonderland.
It is like Wonderland.
And it's like never ending too. That's when you know you found your path. It's like when you know it's infinite and you know there's like a rush and you know there's like highs and lows, but none of that matters because it's just the work that you're just married to.
You will never work a day in your life if you do something you love.
Yes.
Even the hard days. Like I'm at my office sometimes like 10:30 at night and I'm looking out of the window and the parking lot's empty and I'm like, man, there's like a billion people that would kill to be sitting in this seat stressing right now.
Right, right.
So I am very appreciative and I'm always aware that I wouldn't say luck. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of legwork.
But a lot of rewrites.
A lot of notes. But I am fortunate, and I really do appreciate that.
Well, let's talk about the transition from you doing third grade essay contests into writing screenplays. So you went to school. Did you study English? Did you, like, what made you fall in love with writing for TV and film?
So, again, I went to college. I went to UCLA. I was actually
We'll forgive that.
Yes. Because I grew up a mile away from USC. And I wanted to go someplace with hills and grass.
Oh, it's pretty there, man. It's pretty.
It's beautiful. And I have at Century City and Bel Air and Beverly Hills.
You guys definitely have the location.
So I'm like, psst, come on, man.
Yeah.
but I was going to be I was a psychology major. Because what I wanted to be was a child psychologist.
Interesting.
Because growing up, sometimes you get picked on for being different.
Right.
And I was different. Like, I was the best athlete in the school, but I also helped start the chess club.
Right. Wow.
So, people didn't know.
We got to play chess sometime, man.
Oh, yeah. No, we can do that. But people didn't know what box to put me in.
Right.
And so, you know, kids are cruel. So, they used to, like, try to pick on me, but then they had to pick me for kickball.
Right.
So, they were conflicted. So I know there, and you know, I grew up in a house, it was very conventional for the area I grew up in, but like I never met my dad, never knew my dad. He's still out there somewhere, but I've literally never met him.
Wow.
But it was my mother, my grandmother, my grandfather, my aunt, my cousin, and my sister, and myself. We lived in a 2-bedroom house when I was a kid. And I was, you know, I didn't know any better, but I still look back on that and say I was very lucky.
Well, you had a good support system.
Oh, yeah.
And you had, like, five times the discipline that most kids probably had to.
Right. And I went to the store a lot.
Right.
Could you go run to the store and get me? Yeah, those are some awkward moments. But I learned that kids need somebody to talk to.
Right.
And I wanted to do that. So I went to UCLA and I took psych classes. I didn't take English for a reason because I love to write just to write.
Right. And you didn't want to kill it.
I didn't want a teacher telling me the way I wrote was wrong.
Ah,
because
interesting.
A lot of professors, even screenwriting teachers, they tell you how they write.
Right.
They don't nurture how you write.
Right. That's very true.
So
very true.
I was like, I don't want you to take the fun out of writing for me. So when I decided to leave psychology, because I was like, you know what? It's the theory of things.
Right.
More than dealing with the things.
Right.
So I became a sociology major, which deals with people and cultures. And like, it's more boots on the ground.
Right.
And then I took a lot of history classes as well, because I love stories. It's nothing but stories. I almost got kicked out of UCLA once for that. It's a very funny story. So I have a really, it's close to photographic memory. So
wow.
I was taking a blue book exam at UCLA and in my history class, and I had like 21 direct quotes.
Wow.
And they pulled me in the office and they said, you know, would you like to tell us anything before we render our verdict? I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. They're like, you have 21 direct quotes. I'm like, yes. I would have had more, but I didn't have enough time.
Wow.
And they said, no one can do that. I said, give me a piece of paper and a pen. And I wrote 32 direct quotes.
Wow.
And I left.
And that is crazy.
But again, it's that Finding Forrester moment.
Right.
You ever watch
Yes, yeah, I love
that's
that
one of my
movie.
Favorite movies. Great Basketball movie. Playing writer.
Yep.
That's
yep.
me.
Yep.
But if other people can't do it, they don't think it can be done.
Right. So true.
Especially coming from someone who doesn't look like the typical person.
Right. Right. Which is like bullshit, because then there's another whole nother layer of, what, I got to compete with that too, you know?
Oh, but you know you have to
yes.
compete with that.
Yes.
But so I was at UCLA. And I would write these stories on the side. And I had a friend who I was living with this, my roommate, Nadine. And she had a friend who came and stayed with us. And his friend just made a movie.
Wow.
And he was like, yo, that story you told me the other day. I have this story. It's basically X-Files meets Batman.
Awesome. I'm in.
It's a black superhero.
I'm in, dude. I'm in.
And then and he's like, dude, you should write that. I'm like, I've never written anything in my life. He's like, dude, you're a great writer. And you're smart. You can figure it out. So I thought about that. I went to Barnes & Noble. I bought Pulp Fiction.
Oh, man.
My father literally built me a computer.
Gave me chills, man.
And my girlfriend at the time bought me Final Draft for my birthday. And I just sat down and I wrote. And I wrote my first screenplay. And I fell in love with it. And I basically been teaching myself how to write to a point where...
But it's a very different style of writing with screenplays, because it's all dialogue and action. So it's like the dialogue pushes the story, the action just shows the director what you want them to see, basically, or how you want them to shoot it.
But writing essays my whole life, you have to be able to create a picture.
Yeah.
You have to paint the picture.
Right.
What's the narrative? Put the people where in the mindset that you want them to be in. So when I started writing these scripts, I'm like, oh. One day I probably will direct, because the way I write is very visual.
Right.
And I want you to feel like if you're reading a book, you can close your eyes and you're there.
Right.
But I fell in love with writing then, and I've been, I don't know.
You've been building your castle, man. Castle of a career. You've been doing some pretty cool things. The first thing after you wrote that screenplay? First of all, did that screenplay ever get made?
No, actually, I...
You gotta get that made, man.
It is the thing I might hold on to when I get to the point where I can just be like, you know what? I want to do this movie. And you're like, sure.
Wow.
But it's basically a Roswell... It's an alien hybrid movie. It's like an X-Files type movie, but it's about a black guy in South Central. And it's a very, it's a fun story.
That's awesome.
But,
do you see it as a movie or a TV series?
No, it's a movie, but it's okay. Like a, it's a series of movies.
Okay.
But, so I wrote that, and then I wrote a thriller about a cop and a serial killer. That was the second thing I wrote. And the third thing I wrote, it's probably my most favorite thing. Because I wrote it after my mom died. And it was a story about a kid who's from a bad neighborhood who has a talent that they deem not marketable, but someone else sees that talent and realizes just how much that's worth. Right. It's just a way to show how people in bad neighborhoods have really, they have amazing skills that they don't believe will take them anywhere.
Right, right.
Because some people, you know, you're a genius or you're a piano prodigy or...
But it's also the environment. It's like, it's like the trajectory of the environment is putting pressure or cutting it down. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And that was the story that got me noticed. That's the first one that got me noticed in town. It was supposed to get made, didn't happen. Supposed to get made a few times, and this year I'm planning on getting it made. Awesome. But it's been some time, but it's been optioned by companies over 10 times, and everyone wants to do it, and somehow it never happens.
Right.
So this year,
isn't that like drive you a little bit nuts how the politics of the industry work, even just within a team of trying to make something great within the team, you have different people wearing different hats.
Yeah, the camps within different... You can be on a show and there'll be two different camps. So you have to navigate, well, who's on whose side? And
right.
Like, you don't want to annoy anyone. Like, luckily, I've been blessed with my shows, but I've seen it. I've heard it. It's not fun. But as you said, I've been... building my castle.
Yeah.
And I've got enough credibility, I guess, in this town now to do something like this. And it's a really good story. And I think it's a story that needs to be told. Like, it falls in the vein of like a Good Will Hunting.
Right.
Basically.
It's one of my favorite movies.
So it's Good Will Hunting.
I can tell you and I like a lot of the same. Like, just from your cartoon selection to the movies, we like a lot of the same things.
Oh, yeah. And you also like the Lakers.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. So, hell yeah. I was watching a whole special on the Dynasty from 99, you know, that whole thing yesterday.
Because why wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly. Man, I can get hooked on that.
Writing is something that it means a lot to me because no matter where you are, no matter what you do, like I was working assistant jobs, but I would go home and write.
Right.
Because that was my escape. And right. My escape is now my career.
That's amazing.
That's kind of cool.
And what was the first break that you got that you were like, okay, now I can launch into this other realm that I've been working towards?
It's funny. It was that script I'm trying to get, well, I will get made this year. I met a lot of people through that script. And it was the first time I got the validation of, yo, you're really good.
That's awesome.
And you need that. Because there's a lot of time sleeping on couches.
Yep.
Because you have to sacrifice for, like...
The normal life.
I went to school with a lot of smart people.
Right.
I have friends who are doctors, lawyers.
Yep.
Like, senators. Smart people. And I was the guy that was like, you know what? I'm going to forego going to law school, forego being in marketing, and I'm going to try this.
Yeah.
And... It's amazing that all my friends were like, look, if you ever need anything, if you ever want anything, I got you. Just keep going. I know you can do this. And you don't get that a lot.
Right.
So I had a group of friends who looked out for me, and now they are reveling in my success just as much as I am.
Right.
And that means a lot. Like, you don't get a chance to follow your dreams and achieve your dreams. Usually it's an isolating thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's
so good to have a network, though. You know, I was actually just telling somebody recently, it's like there are no people that make it in this industry without a support group, whether it's your family, whether it's your friends, whether it's people you're working with, whether it's agents, whether it's a publicist, whoever it is. Sometimes it's a manager that just sees something in you that helps you, but usually it's the network helping you push that rock up the mountain. You know?
It's also people saying, it's like it's two networks, right? It's that network, and then it's the network who are struggling in Hollywood with you.
Right.
And you see your friends doing the exact same thing you're trying to do, whether it's directing or acting or in music. We're all struggling together.
Yeah.
Like, I have a bad, crappy assistant job. They work at a restaurant. This other person is like a legal assistant. But at night, we come together and we are like the superheroes of our lives. Right. So it's, and luckily my wife is fairly decent.
She's the best, man. We love Corey.
I love her to death. But she's the backbone, right? Like, she had the steady job.
Well, it's also the other thing, too. It's like, and I've been explaining this to so many people. It's like, as artists, you undervalue home life because all you're focusing on is like trying to create work, and that's all you're thinking about. So when you have somebody that creates a home life for you, it is like one of the most nurturing and supportive things anybody can create for your life, because it's everything. It becomes everything.
Oh no, I lean on her so much, because like even when I was working on the show last season, or just any show in general, I'm always writing something else.
Right.
So I leave the show at 6, 7, 8 o'clock. I go home and hang out with my wife for like an hour, hour and a half. And then I go in my office and write till 2 or 3.
Wow. That's
crazy. And then I get up and do it every day.
Wow. You write every day like that?
I write fairly fast. So I just have to formulate the thought in my head. And then once I have it, I just like to get it out. But I'll go on runs for months that I'll do that. And you have to be very understanding, because you don't see me a lot.
Right. Yes.
So...
Or the fact that you bring your work home. That's another thing.
Yeah, never. I never turn it off.
And it's like, because it's who we are. It's like, man, it's like everything that I think about. It's everything I think about all the time.
My phone rings at 10:45. And usually wives are like, who's calling you at 10:45? My wife would just be like, tell Jeff I say hi. Or whatever. Because my friends are in different parts of the country.
Right.
And they're calling with something. They need advice about something. Right. Or I called them earlier and I need advice about something. So, like, I had friends in Hawaii and then friends in London, and they were calling me. But the time difference is so weird. My phone was just ringing it every hour of the day.
But don't you notice, it's like, as you keep ascending, you see that your network around you is also ascending, and everybody's kind of at this, like, now in my career, it's like, when I look back at where I started from compared to where everybody that I was starting with now, everybody's kind of ascended to this level, and it's exciting. This is the exciting part of the career.
It's ascending, but it's still like in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't reached the top, not even close.
Yes.
But it's still a pretty good spot.
Yeah.
Like, so back to what you're saying is like, we bring our work home, we work all the time, right? I haven't had a vacation in 15 years.
Right.
So Corey and I, my wife, people, and my in-laws, we went to Mexico City for New Year's. When I was in Mexico City, I realized that all my friends were out of the country for New Year's.
Wow.
That's when you know your friends have reached a certain level of, you know what, I'm just going to take off for a few weeks and just clear my head. Couldn't do that before.
But you know what? That's what makes it. It's like, oh, We've arrived on some level. It's like, we're there. Because it's like, when you're trying to, I always tell people this too. It's like, when you're an artist, you literally have to create revenue out of nothing. You're almost like a magician. You're like, this is what I do. I need to create value for it. Whereas every other career, it's like, if I go to this school, I'll get this internship, or I'll get this residency, and I'll get this job. And then that's what I'll be making money.
Right.
You know what I mean? But for artists, it's like, you're constantly doing that. And the only thing is, your value becomes more, you know, increased as you keep just laying it down with great ideas or great creatives, you know?
It's weird. It's like, you know, when you start out, it's the, you can't get seen unless you have an agent.
Right.
And you can't get an agent unless you've been seen.
Right.
It's the great Hollywood catch 22. It spans acting, writing, directing, music. It's just the way it is. But once you're seen and you become a commodity, then it's just a matter of just persevering, just staying around.
Right.
This is a war of attrition.
Right.
Like, and the people who don't make it, who have talent, quit. And that's why you need that network of people around you to support you on your bad days.
Right.
And to remind you that you're just a person on your good days.
Right.
Because people can get the God complex if you start doing things and everything is hidden. I'm amazing. No, you're not. You're just a person.
Just rattle off a couple of the amazing things that you've been recently writing for. You don't have to tell anybody about the future projects, but just some of the past things you've done.
Well, the last 3 years have been pretty fun. So I've been writing on Black Lightning since it started.
Wow.
So season 3, we're actually shooting the finale now. So these last 3 years have been amazing. So in the last year, I got to write our crisis crossover episode that introduced Black Lightning into the quote unquote Arrowverse, which was amazing because I'm a huge superhero. I'm a blurred. I'm just saying. I'm a huge superhero guy, and I've always wanted to see how Jefferson would be with the rest of the heroes.
Right.
And we finally got that shot. And I got to help craft Jefferson for the crisis. So every episode he was in, so Flash episode 3 and Legends of Tomorrow episode 5, you know, we got to write his dialogue.
That's crazy.
And the thing I love the most, the scene that encapsulates my entire journey on that show with the crisis is the, I don't know if you watched it. I'm sure you watched
it. Yeah.
But it's the scene with Black Lightning and Barry in the library. And it's not about a black guy and a white guy having a conversation about the earth ending.
Right.
It's about two sons talking about their love for their fathers and pushing forward as to not disappoint them and carry on their memory. It was the most fun scene I've ever written.
Wow.
And it was my ode to just being a kid, not seeing a hero on TV that looked like me.
Right. That's significant. That's so significant.
I got to write on the first broadcast superhero, black superhero show ever. There was, you know, Luke Cage was Netflix.
That was on Netflix, that's right.
But it wasn't. It's
it was
not
only
broadcast.
One season, right? I think it was one season.
It was two seasons of Luke Cage, so we passed Luke Cage. And then there was a show in the 80s. I can't remember the name. But the lead guy was a black guy who was in a wheelchair, Mantis.
Oh, yeah. Man, that takes me way back.
It was on Fox. So, but that was the only other. So in the last 30 years, this is it. And I wanted that scene to be like
real.
And it's all about me watching the Justice League as a kid.
Yeah.
And
totally.
I know how much Kress loves superheroes. And he was like a kid in the candy store, but I just wanted that scene to be more than just about superficial stuff.
Right.
And
you know, that's what brings the humanity to these characters. And I think that's everything. 'Cause it's like, once you see the humanity, even in a superhero, it doesn't matter if they're wearing a cape or if they've got like, you know, a mask on or whatever. When you bring the humanity to them, it becomes this invigorating thing that you're captivated, you know?
It's just, you also want to just pay homage to their stories.
Right.
Like, because Barry and his dad and his mother's death in Reverse Flash, that made him, literally. It's the big part of who he is. And Jefferson's father's death, seeing Tobias kill his father when he was 12, made him who he is.
Right.
So to not lean into that moment when you have them alone, I thought it would be a disservice.
Yes.
So it's funny. Originally, that scene was between Jefferson and Kara.
Hmm.
But they had these big, you know, showrunner meetings for Mark Guggenheim, random, love Mark, he's the best. So Caroline from Batwoman, Eric Wallace from The Flash, everyone from Super, like, they were all in this room. It's like, it was literally the Hall of Justice for showrunners. And I was there with Charles Holland at the time, who was the number two on our show, under Salim. And I pitched my idea to the room about maybe changing it to Barry. And Eric Wallace was like, yes.
Wow.
He was like, that's a great idea. You should run with it. And we took it back and we workshopped it. And I, because the way The Crisis was written, like those scenes, because we got in a little later. So Flash, Sterling and Lauren Cherto, Sterling Gates, Lauren Cherto wrote that episode of The Flash.
Right.
But then they send it over to Black Lightning to say, okay, this is the framework for the scene.
So right in between.
So, right. So
yeah, that's interesting.
So we basically wrote the Jefferson side of the conversation.
So, but you had seen what the other side of the conversation was going to look like, right?
Right. Yeah.
That's
so
interesting.
So,
that's almost like somewhat limiting in the way you can write, but also you can control the conversation because you already know half the conversation.
Yeah, I know that side. Right. So how would Jefferson respond? And then how would he lead Barry into other conversations? And because Sterling and Lauren are just amazing at what they do, we would just go back and forth.
Right.
And because there's a line where Barry, that was in the original script, where Barry says, my father, he had a light, and even though he had all this stuff happened to him and one of my enemies killed my mother and framed him, he just never let that light, like, diminish.
Right.
I'm paraphrasing. And I like to remember that in times like this. So as soon as I heard that line, I was like, Dylan Thomas, Rage Against the Dying of the Light.
Yeah.
So I wrote that from Jefferson's point of view. And then he's like, well, my dad, Alvin Pierce, and he tells Barry about his dad. And then he's like, the lessons I've learned from my father, I passed on to my girls. And, you know, his girls, they're gone.
Crazy.
Like, at this point, they're gone. And he has that moment of realization, like, the lesson. And then you see that moment of emotional Cress's face, and then it hits Barry, and then he said, you know, our fathers didn't raise any quitters, so we should
elevate
and then Rage Against the Dying of the Light. And then says Flash says Dylan Thomas, and he's like, all right then, Flash. And then this is the moment I always wanted. It was, they need to have a moment where they introduce themselves as men.
Right.
And at the end of that, he says, you know, all right then, Flash. And then Barry says, actually, it's Barry. Barry Allen. And he says, Jefferson Pierce. And that's the moment where they actually meet. Like, that's, they fight crazy before, but
right,
this is like their emotional connection. And I was like, I'm tapping out after this. I can't do.
You're like, this is it. This is the peak.
Can't do better than that one. But, you know, like, Salim was great. Charles was great, and like, we all just kind of workshopped scenes and just to make sure Jefferson was Jefferson.
Right.
He stayed true to who he was, because, you know, a lot of these shows, everybody has all these,
there's ulterior motives, there's ulterior,
well, like, they just know how their shows run,
right?
So, which is why they always lean on other people to make sure that, are we getting the voice right?
Right.
Which is, you know, that's why I said it's Guggenheim.
Is the narrative preserved, essentially.
Right. But the way they do these crossovers, it's amazing that they care enough to lean into the other shows and ask, is this correct? And if it's not correct, help us fix it.
Right.
So we can be as true to your characters as possible. And it's, you know, it's that whole camp, the Arrowverse camp, Berlanti, the Akeels, everybody's been amazing to me this entire run. And, you know, DC, Warner Brothers, CW, it's a good place to be.
Let me ask you one last question. You said Quentin Tarantino's Pulp Fiction was a major influence. What other writers or directors, writer-directors, were major influences for you?
Well, let me see. It's funny. So I'm more of a comedian guy, right? So I love writers, but I love somebody like Richard Pryor, right? Is a huge influence to me because he told the world how things were.
Right.
Not how they perceive them to be.
Right.
He's like, this is reality. Let me show you. And he did it in a way that was digestible for everyone.
Right.
Everyone laughed.
Right.
You might have been uncomfortable, but you laughed.
Right.
And then you went along with the story and you started to think, well, you know what? Maybe I should look into this. Maybe they are being traded unfairly. Maybe this is happening. And that's what I try to do. I try to, in anything that I do, I always tell people, I like to build bridges, not walls.
Yeah.
So if you're telling a story and you want to incorporate everyone, the world is a diverse place. So it should be reflected in the stories you tell. But be true to the people and the cultures that you're talking about. I just, you know, I need everyone to get their fair share.
Yeah. Dude, that was a great answer. Where can people find you if they want to find you online, social media, etc.?
Well, if you want to stalk me, I'm Lamont McGee. It's at Lamont McGee. That's Twitter. It's at LamontMagee. And on Instagram, it's at LaMcGee33. So at LaMcGee33.
Lamont, you're going to have to come back, man. We had a great time interviewing you, dude. You're a hell of a cat, dude. We see great things in your future. Keep building that castle, man.
Well, when I shoot these movies this year, I'll come back and I'll tell you about it.
Yeah, let's do it. On behalf of Ronan, myself, and Eddie, we'll see you guys next week.